John Krasinski, who owns The Athletic. Not a lot of people realize that. John now owns The Athletic. Why he still writes for The Athletic and he owns it, I have no idea. He's on with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. When did you buy The Athletic from The New York Times? When was that?
No, I you got it a little backwards, Chad. I did own The Athletic, and then we sold The Athletic. So now I'm just like sitting on the piles and piles of cash that I made from that transaction and just like doing this for fun. As you know, being in the media and this job, especially the job of a beat writer, is very, very fun.
Very fun. Very
all
fun.
All the time.
Yes.
And so I just do it for the love of the game, really.
The love of the game. That's that. In fact, I'm going to change. It's not going to say John K. It's going to say for the love of the game whenever I call or text you. We're going to keep you for a couple segments here. I want to start with your outstanding analysis yesterday, available to individuals who spend a little bit of money in The Athletic. I heartily endorse it. Great, great stuff on a regular basis, not just John, but Russo and all the excellent work. Chris Finch's second full season for the Wolves, what went right and what went wrong? Now, you witnessed it. You lived it. You were consuming it. But now when you kind of do one of those deep dives, let me start with this one. When you looked at the offense and defense and looked at Chris's comments, what part of this surprised you most when you look back at it with the data which you use to add to your story?
Yeah, I think like what we saw is that this was sort of this last season for Chris Finch in his second full season was sort of the opposite of the Tom Thibodeau effect. Remember, Tibbs came in here and had this reputation as a defensive guru, a mastermind that was going to raise that level on that end of the floor for these young Wolves. And he really couldn't do that at any point in his tenure here, not even when he got Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson and all the other Bulls. They really struggled defensively, but they were really, really good offensively. They were top five, top 10 offense every year that he had them basically with the Wolves. Now with Finch, it's the opposite. He came in as an offensive guru, as someone who had been in Europe, who had been in the G League, who had been a high level assistant at many programs and in the NBA, and was really well thought of for his innovation, for his creativity, for his adaptability offensively. But really his best work, certainly this season, was defensively. They were 23rd in the league offensively this season, and defensively they were 10th. And so I think that just kind of seeing those numbers, but particularly, Chad, the crunch time numbers were the ones that really kind of stood out, because we think of these Wolves as a team that just constantly couldn't close the door, that would, you know, were susceptible to runs, and couldn't close the door, couldn't win the close games. And their offense was terrible in crunch time. Awful. 103 points per 100 possessions is terrible. But because their defense was so good, they were actually 28-20 in those crunch time games, games that came right down to the wire. Only the Miami Heat had more victories in crunch time
that
than
seems
the
crazy
in the regular season.
Right?
So
I'm just watching it, not as close as you, but awfully close. I feel like when you told me that, I'd tell you to go back. No, you got to look at that. That can't be right. Well, and then you stay with the offense, because I thought another great piece of data from the story is the rating, as you nailed it, is per 100 possessions. Charlotte had another one of their classic nondescript seasons, including, and a lot of it was injury-related, including LaMelo hurt a lot. They had a rating of 108.4 for the entire regular season. So then, as you point out, when the Wolves had Gobert, Towns, and Edwards on the floor, that is their core right now, with Jaden and Conley just on the edges. But, I mean, those are your three real big knockers right now, Gobert, Towns, and Ant. The Wolves had a 106.7 rating with those three on the floor. That is dreadful, Johnny.
Just terrible. Yep, awful. And, you know, of course, some of the injuries play into that. Towns missing 50 games. Neither Towns nor Gobert being in training camp really much at all. so they had no foundation to build on. This was always going to be a difficult process to incorporate this unique two-big lineup, and it was going to take a lot of work and a lot of adapting for coaches, for players, for everyone to make it work. And they had so many pieces in and out of the lineup that it'd be hard to get continuity. But you look at that, and Chris Finch says it in the piece. Is just, he said that he never felt that he got a feel for the offense, and he felt like it was shifting sands under his feet. Was his exact quote. And so he is fully admitting that he could not like wrap his arms around their offensive issues, and that has to be, you know, objective numbers 1, 2, and 3 summer. Figure that out. We saw a few glimmers of it in the Denver playoff series, of maybe some signs in the right direction. But certainly, if you are going to run it back, if you're not going to trade Towns or Rudy, and you're going to keep this core largely intact, they have to figure out something to get those three going at a much higher clip on a much more consistent level.
You know this. I didn't like the trade at the start. I would listen on both. I text you guys. We've got a few threads that we're both in. I would listen really loudly on a Portland trade involving Cat because of the salary cap as much as anything. But let's say that doesn't happen, because I'm with you. I think there's 85 to 90% chance that Conley and Finch believed in this so much last year that they want to see a full, healthy season. So let's say they come back, right? And everybody's back. If I had to guess now, I guess Nas is not back, because I think somebody's going to offer him a little bit more money and a little bit more of a guarantee of minutes. So, again, if you have Gobert, Towns, Edwards, and let's say they're all together for 70 games, what do you think he's talking about? How is he adjusting the offense for those three to work better on the floor when you still have some of the core issues that Rudy's never been a great post-up player, and he's maybe even slipped more, and he occupies a lot of space. You know, Cat isn't as great a post-up player as a lot of people think he is, so he doesn't really abuse the smaller guys, but he's still this great multi-dimensional player. And the better Ant is, the more space. So how do you make those three work together when Chris was seeing that all last year? He put in hundreds of hours thinking those changes. I can't imagine all of a sudden this summer it's going to be like, voila, I've now figured it out.
Yeah, I do think that there is one possible semi-magic bullet, Chad, to helping at least get it from an inept offense to at least a pretty good offense. And one thing that has to happen this summer, and certainly a lot in training camp, is that Anthony Edwards and Rudy Gobert have to run a million pick and roll get some sort of continuity together. Because Ant, prior to playing with Rudy, had never played at any level with a rolling big like Rudy Gobert. And you can tell he is very uncomfortable when to pass it, when to drive, where to throw the ball, how to throw that lob. Ant never threw a lob in his life, basically, before this season. And so if they can get some sort of chemistry, some sort of connectivity just in that simple action, I think that would really open up a lot for the offense as a whole. You have Cat spacing, you have Ant diving to the rim, you have Rudy kind of coming down the lane that and sucking defenders away from Ant to open up the driving lanes. Then you have the lob that opens up. And I do think that has to formulate some way, because Ant is, as has been established already this summer, Ant's the guy. He is the one that everyone is building around. And so he's got to figure out a way, and they have to figure out a way to maximize him with Gobert that way, because I do think Towns is versatile enough to play off of that a little bit more. And so if they can get some sort of effectiveness with that action, that can really put some stress on defenses and really kind of change the calculus for
Well, them. Let's add this before we pause. Ant had some brilliant moments in the playoffs, especially as the series moved along. But it was also crystal clear. There were times, Rudy, was wide open, and Anthony Edwards
wouldn't do it.
Would not pass him the ball. Just wouldn't pass him the ball. It's because he doesn't trust him.
Yes. Yep, exactly. 100%. And so they have to develop some kind of trust. So it's two things. I don't think he trusted Rudy to catch the ball, which we've seen plenty of evidence that Rudy has trouble catching the ball in traffic. But I also think that Ant did not trust himself to make the right lob pass. We saw like Kyle Anderson, Mike Conley, and even Cat to an extent had much more comfortable throwing that little halfway lob.
Right.
And Ant just never could do that. And so that's got to be that there's got to be some more comfort instilled in him that way this summer to allow him to do that.
Let's pause, put Johnny on hold, come back, check out John's outstanding work, The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at John Krasinski. I want to talk a little bit about NBA Finals, Game 3 tonight, and also Dave did some little work himself on Minnesota sports ineptitude, trying to find a year or two when Minnesota sports had success, considering what's going on in Miami. They've got both teams in the finals, and they just added Messi. And we got who? We got Crunch. I mean, we got Ragnar. That's what we've got right here. John Kay in moments on CCO. 23 past 2. Chad Hartman with my friend John Krasinski. His outstanding work available in The Athletic on a regular basis. Game 3 tonight in South Florida. Heat, Nuggets, it's 1-1. I think my favorite part of the series so far, John, was post-game, game 2, and Michael Malone showing no hesitation whatsoever to dice and slice his team. And his team so comfortable with it that they weren't bothered at all. You know, there is, God, Chuck Daly's, you know, made a living about saying this, that the way to be an NBA coach is you hope you find the players who allow you to coach them. And Malone is a little bit like Pop and a few other guys who will build this relationship, this rapport with players, but when he needs to, he will crush them. And I thought it was great because, to me, there's way too much tippy-toeing. I thought he was right. I don't think they played great in either game. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just – well, I know I'm stubborn. I still like Denver in 5. I still think they're just better. I think we're going to see two of these next three games very competitive. But I still just think the Nuggets are notably better than Miami.
Yeah, I think, first of all, on Michael Malone, Chad, you're right. And the thing that, to his credit, is, and one of part of his reputation is, he is a guy who is not afraid to publicly lambaste his team. And he will do it in a January after a Charlotte game. He will do it in game 2 of the NBA Finals. And you might think, wow, is he jumping the gun? Is he going to alienate these guys? No, he doesn't, because of that rapport that he's built. And I do think that he sees this team as one that needs a little kick in the butt sometimes.
Yep, right.
And we saw it in the Wolves series as well. He said it after game 4 when the Wolves won, and he kind of wrapped their knuckles. Like, this is a team that responds well to that. And if they hadn't responded well to it earlier on, he would probably not do that. And so I think that he's just like, hey guys, it's time to wake up. Like, and that's what he did. And those guys, Jokic and Murray and stuff, they all take it in stride. And that's just Coach Malone, and they don't take it personally. So that's great. I do agree with you too on the series in general. I just think that for Miami to win games, let alone the series, just to win games, so much has to go right.
Yes,
for them.
Exactly.
And Denver just has many more ways to answer and adjust and respond when things are not going well for them because of Jokic and how brilliant that he is. So I loved what Miami did in game 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the approach was great, and they played well, and they earned a win in a place that's almost impossible to win in these days. But I do think that the Nuggets will just figure things out and will find a way, make adjustments, and probably regain a little bit of that edge and intensity that we saw earlier in the playoffs. and put their foot on the gas starting tonight.
Okay. The three of us, including Dave Harrigan, have mainly lived in this state. We've lived in other places, but mainly in this state. So I asked Dave.
Love it or leave it.
Yeah. We get out, and they suck us back in, okay? So, I mean, Miami, my God. I mean, even the Marlins aren't bad this year, and Arise is hitting 900, and now Messi's going to Miami, and you got, you know, even though the Panthers play in Fort Lauderdale, it's still South Florida. So I said, Dave, find me a year or two where you think Minnesota sports had their greatest year, where collectively you can find something. Dave mentioned to me again during the break, it's a good reminder because we romanticize your sport of hockey. We romanticize the North Stars. The North Stars mainly stunk in the playoffs. They just mainly did, you know. And I love Louie. I want to be Louie when I grow up. They had a number of great regular seasons. They had a lot of talent, too much talent, sometimes was thrown out. But even, you know, the couple years that they made their Stanley Cup runs, they were lousy. So, Dave, I told you that what came to mind was 1969 and 2003. 69, the Vikings go to the first Super Bowl, and the Twins win.
They won 97 games, but then were swept out of the ALCS.
By the Orioles, who were one of the great teams of all time. North Stars were irrelevant that year,
they
I'm
were
assuming.
Terrible.
They were terrible.
They were terrible. Well, they did in the 69-70 season.
I was going to get to the Minnesota Muskies.
In the 69-70 season, the North Stars did make it to the quarterfinals of the playoffs. The regular season was 19 wins, 35 losses, and 22 ties.
Yeah, that's terrible. That's terrible. So, again, I mean, that's okay, John. Like, one team the Super Bowl, one team gets to the playoffs, and to the shock of no Minnesota fan, they go out in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now 03, the Wolves go to the first round. T-Hud goes off, but eventually they lose the Lakers in the first round. But that's the year the Wild go on their run, right? I believe I have that correct? That
sounds good to me. Yeah, the Twins, I'm just looking at them. They were ALDS in 2003.
Okay, so
Wild, yes, it was the 2002-03 season. They got to the conference finals. I believe the Vikings were terrible that year.
Yeah. So, could you okay, do you find any
9-7? 9-7. 9-7. Not terrible.
So,
no playoffs.
That might be our peak. I mean, 9-7.
No, there's one more. There's one that you're missing.
Okay.
That's the clear. To me, it's the clear front runner. It's 1991, and that year, that calendar year, it was Twins World Series. North Stars in the Stanley Cup final, and then we had the Super Bowl and the All-Star game or whatever. There was one other big event here, right? And so it was like the sporting world came to Minneapolis. And maybe there was even some golf
U.S. Open. U.S. Open was there, too.
We hosted the Super Bowl.
Washington won. Are you mowing the lawn, by the way, in the background now?
I am outside and the neighbor is mowing it, so I'm trying to get to a quieter place.
I was going to be really impressed if you were doing the interview, but listen, I got stuff to do, Chad. I got the weed whipper out here right now.
Very disrespectful of my neighbor to be. I can't believe they're not listening.
Yes, they podcast. You know, they're podcasting.
Yes.
What else do you have, Dave?
One more year, not that long ago. 2017 was not a bad year.
Okay.
That was when
Minneapolis Miracle.
The Twins won 85 games. Ended up losing in the play-in game, the wild card game to the Yankees.
Okay, shocking.
Vikings 13-3, miracle.
Yep,
didn't go so well in the conference finals against.
Is that
Philly.
Jimmy making the playoffs?
That was Jimmy in the playoffs, and the Wild were 101 points, made it to the playoffs. Obviously,
yeah, that's not bad.
And that was the 17-18 season for the Wild and Wolves.
How?
Yeah, we certainly have nothing close to multiple teams in championship, you know, runs. And the worst thing about this is, Chad, is that it's happening in Miami where literally fans there could not care less. Like, they will show up tonight 30 minutes after the game starts, and they will leave an hour, you know, right after halftime. Like, there's just so much indifference in Miami. It's not like here where everyone would be going absolutely bonkers if it was the Wild and the Wolves both in the finals at the same time. I mean, this place would be on fire in the best way possible. Miami, they'll just be down at South Beach drinking their Mai Tais and hanging out and checking it out.
If right now Target Center and the X would let fans in, if both teams were in the championship, the both buildings would be full right now. You're so right.
Yes.
Because also in the Miami Arena, whatever we're calling it now, they have like 9 bars, like just behind the lower level. So
Yes. That's
why tonight, just watch the game. Tonight, when that game starts, no chance will the lower bowl be full, because either they'll be at Prime 112 or Joe Stone Crabs or somewhere else, or they'll be one of the 7 bars, you know, behind the place.
Yeah, and nobody who lives in Miami is from Miami, at least that can afford tickets to get into these games. So, like, there's just not the same connection. Now, certainly the Heat are a big deal when they win because it's fashionable. It's very, it's the cool thing to be at. And so you're going to see models and you're going to see Instagram influencers and people showing up to see and be seen. Whereas the atmosphere at Target Center, if it was game 3 tonight and it was 1-1, and they're playing Miami and Jimmy Butler it would have been filled yesterday.
Yes.
Like everyone would have camped out and they would have had been frothing at the mouth and it would have been absolutely insane. All of this success is being wasted in a market like that, unfortunately.
Let's say your core family says, Dad, John, we want to go to Taylor Swift. We'll go either the 23rd or 24th. And your wife looks you in the eye and says, we have to go. We just have to go. I mean, you just have to make this happen. Do you have a bottom line how much you would pay? Because I have found out from multiple people the last couple days that they've had an opportunity to buy tickets. The latest person I talked to yesterday said he might buy tickets for $3,000, and I said I'm sending him. I mean, I really want to go just for the spectacle.
Yeah.
No chance. Nowhere near there. No chance. Unless she's, performing in my backyard. You know, then yes, I will pay that amount of money.
I would say if we got to that point, if my daughter, who has me wrapped around her finger, whatever you say, yes, we're doing, she, looks up at me with the big brown eyes and says, we have to go. I am calling you and I'm calling Barrero and I'm calling in some markers from over the years.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I've helped you guys out. Like, now it's time to kick in on this, because I don't see any other way I could do it. The one thing I will say is it is an exorbitant, ridiculous amount of money from everything I've heard.
Amazing.
Amazing, right? Like, she ain't playing for an hour and just playing a couple of her hits and getting out the door. She's giving you 3 hours of just incredible spectacle. So in that respect, great. But boy, once we get into the 4 figures for a concert, that's a tough one for the athletic budget to come up with.
It's a lot. And by the way, call me, call Dan, I'll call Mune. Okay, so you call me, call Mune.
Yes.
Okay, so.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, brother.
Yes.
Go yell at your neighbor for me. I mean, come on, knock it off. By the way, who cuts their grass at 2:30 in the afternoon? What's going on?
I thought I was safe coming outside, enjoying a little sun and talking to you guys, and you just never know in this neighborhood. So, I'm definitely going to dress them down a little
Thank
bit
you.
And see if we can fix things for next time.
Thank you very much. Have a great day, sir.
All right, guys.
John Krasinski from The Athletic. I'm only 8 minutes late to this break. Last year, Jeff Zucker out, had a relationship with someone else well up in the company. But again, it was a violation of the policies of Jeff Zucker, who's had a very successful career throughout TV, a lot of success with NBC, bounced at CNN from Chief Brain Wizard, and CNN eventually hires Chris Licht, who his 2 main gigs were helping create Morning Joe and then the resurgence of Colbert Show. And Licht, it seemed like the main thing he was trying to do is we're going to try to go back to our where we were before. When you think of us as breaking news, and by the way, we don't want to be viewed as just a liberal place, that we're going to be more welcoming to Republicans, and that, yes, we're going to report on Donald Trump, but maybe not as much. And he made other moves, right? Changed up the morning show, which wasn't having a lot of success. And he put together Caitlin Collins, Poppy Harlow, and Don Lemon. I said this before Don Lemon was fired. I just thought Don Lemon was, I thought he was just okay, right? I really just think he's okay. And then he said just a remarkably insulting thing about women and Nikki Haley. Reports came out that he was a jackass to work with, and eventually he was fired. He made some other moves, and then there was all the discussion about the Trump town hall. I still believe 100% today the idea of the Trump town hall made sense. Again, I don't think he's equipped to be the president of the United States. I've said that over and over again. But guess what? He was. And even the last couple of days with DeSantis picking up a little bit of ground, he still is by far, the leading contender to be the Republican nominee. And, you know, a lot of ways people are saying, well, he should have done this, should have done that. Trump wouldn't have okayed that. I thought Caitlin Collins did a good job. Could they have made, as Major pointed out, a la Tim Russert, added to Caitlin's pushback? Because when people say Caitlin Collins didn't push back, you weren't watching or you weren't paying attention, because she was. But the lies come at such a pace, it's hard to keep track. Now, could they have put more graphics up to show to even further illuminate? But all the big-time lefties saying, oh, this is the end of CNN for putting him on? He was the 45th president of the United States. He's facing indictments. He's the leading contender. He's in the news. He's in the arena. His biggest mistake, his latest biggest mistake, though, is when he let Tim Alberta follow him for a long, long time for this lengthy, lengthy story in the Atlantic, which didn't come off very favorably, Dave. Did not. It was.
That's one way to put it.
Yeah. Number one, it was putting himself right in the middle of the news, right? As opposed to, I'm just the guy running it. Let me try to make things better, not make it about me. How he just didn't have a relationship with so many people, how he was awkward, how he never talked to individuals, and how he was detached. So he's gone. So what is the CNN move? Because I've said this a thousand times. You're better off today staking a position well to the right or well to the left. Now, clearly, in talk radio, well to the right has worked way better. Just has. Rush, Hannity, Beck, others, local, national. We don't have really one guy who's well left who's had a ton of success nationally, right? I mean, limited success, but not significant.
Nothing even approaching the names you...
Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. MSNBC has had a little more, has had more rating success of late than CNN, and they're more left and opinion-driven left than CNN is. Fox has obviously had more success than those two combined. And now we're kind of wondering how it's going to play out after Tucker left. But, you know, they survived O'Reilly. They survived Megyn Kelly's departure. Let's see who they replace Tucker with and how that, you know, comes through. So what does CNN do? Because right now they got a lot of Jake Tapper. They got a lot of Anderson Cooper. They got a lot of Caitlin Collins, where they're journalists. And then people can decide, oh, well, I think they're left-leaning journalists or they're straight-down-the-line journalists. I like doing our show where as much as I've offered up my relentless criticism of Don Trump, I think I've offered up a lot of criticism towards the left and right. People get to have their own opinions. But the truth is you're better off just lining up all the lefties or all the righties. That works more often. It really does. Hope the bosses don't listen, but that's just the truth. What does CNN do? Do they just find better? I mean, I think Tapper's great. I think Tapper's one of the best out there. I think Anderson Cooper does a good job. But, like, Anderson Cooper's getting crushed tonight. Do they? I mean, and I know they're going to have those, like, a once a week later in the year. Chris Lickett hired the Chuck Barkley, Gayle King thing, mm-hmm. right? Two very, very talented individuals, but they're both not going to. That's not a daily thing. Gayle's got a regular gig, and you think Chuck wants to do that nightly? No chance. He's got his other gig. What is their move? I mean, are they just going to bring in another person who gets along better with the crew, but they still do about the same thing? Seems like there should be room in America if people believed it was straight down the line journalism and not afraid to report and praise. But I've told this before. I think more and more people don't care about the difference between a reporter and an opinion maker, and they're just drawn to their silo and their team.
Yeah. I mean, you know this better than anybody else. Going straight down the middle doesn't bring any ratings.
Yeah. It does.
You got to infuriate people or get them to say, yep, that's right. Yeah. I'd go back to Crossfire.
Just constant Crossfire?
Honestly, I would have an hour, at least an hour every night, bring back the Crossfire, a righty over here, a lefty. I mean, it works in sports.
Yeah.
I mean, ESPN and FS1 constant. Have been crushing it the last decade or two with, you know, two guys yelling at each other across the table and a moderator in the middle.
Let's bring Jason in the mix when we come back, leading up to his show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. I got two good topics, Glean. Now, you've invited me to Seth's
graduation
party.
Unlike Blois.
Yeah, unlike Blois. Thanks, Blois. Wasn't invited. Dave doesn't think that friends should invite friends to a graduation party unless they're very close with the child. Is that a fair assessment?
I think if the person you're inviting knows the kid, absolutely.
I've met Seth like a couple times.
Yeah.
I think we bonded.
That's an interesting topic.
Of course it is.
Man, what a producer.
Yeah.
Gosh, I wish my producer suggested big stuff like that.
You have to understand this. His point, he doesn't want him invited because he doesn't want to spend any money. I think that's the reason.
Clearly.
I'll stop talking.